Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Good afternoon. This is the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. My guest today, I'm very pleased to have, is Zach Godchill. Zach is a film director, and we're going to talk a lot about his films today. We're specifically talking about Lo and Behold, which he co-wrote with its star, Barlow Jacobs, because it is about Hurricane Katrina. And as we all have heard in the media, the 10th anniversary, August 29th, is coming up. And Lo and Behold is making its digital premiere, or it has, on August 18th on iTunes, to honor 1,800 people, more than 1,800 killed, and a million Americans displaced. But let me introduce, please, Lo and Behold director Zach Godchill. How are you, Zach?
I'm doing fine, Marcello. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for that introduction.
Well, you certainly have earned it, not only for Lo and Behold, but other films that you've made that have been extremely moving and inspiring. But let's talk about, and thank you, by the way, for being on the show. Let's talk about where you are right now and what you are about to do for the first day.
Right, well, it's Monday, August 24th, and I'm getting ready to start teaching some classes at LSU. I'm a professor. I teach screenwriting and film down here in Baton Rouge. And today's the first day of the semester.
Wow, well, congratulations and all the best with that. Tell me, so you are in Baton Rouge. Give us some idea of how far away that is from New Orleans.
Baton Rouge is about 80 miles west of New Orleans, uh-huh. A little further north, too. So New Orleans, you know, is right there, totally surrounded by water. A couple of lakes on one side of New Orleans, swamps on one side, a river on one side. The Baton Rouge is on the river, it's on the Mississippi River, but not as, you know, waterbound as New Orleans is.
Yes. And is it true, 10 years later, August 2005, and now here we are, as you say, August 24th in 2015, on the 29th will be the exact day that the hurricane hit, Hurricane Katrina hit 10 years ago. Has New Orleans completely recovered?
Well, I think it depends on what that means, complete recovery. There still are many people who have never had the chance to move back, so for, I would say in that way that they didn't recover what was once there. There's a lot of new things going on in New Orleans that weren't going on before. I think that what I've noticed is there's a lot of new kind of movement to put. A lot of young people have moved to the city to cultivate certain art and design and infrastructure. So that's interesting. But there's you know, still a lot of infrastructure that's still damaged. And, you know, you drive around certain parts of town and, you know, it looks like Katrina might have been last year. And that's not what people want to hear, but it's kind of the sad truth. It was a major, major catastrophe. Katrina and the floods followed. You know, the floods were, you know,
it's hard to believe because we, I think as Americans, I mean, I don't know what's taking us so long to catch on to this when you look at the drought in California and the fires are getting worse every year and tornadoes in the Midwest and flooding in Florida, even without hurricanes. To give people some perspective, I lived in Florida during Hurricane Andrew, although I was in Europe at the time, and my house wasn't as damaged as some were. But Hurricane Katrina was more powerful than both Hurricane Andrew and Sandy. And, of course, we remember Sandy, you know, this thing that took over the Northeast. So it certainly deserved a film, and we want to talk about Lo and Behold, the film you directed and co-wrote with its star, Barlow Jacobs, and how you were, it was filmed in New Orleans in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. How did all this come about? How did you get in there? Or did you need permission? Were things so chaotic you could just walk in with your camera crew?
Well, in some ways, there was, it was immediate in a way. We weren't really allowed to get back into the city for over a month.
Uh-huh.
I was living in Lafayette, which is a little bit further west from Baton Rouge, so, about 120, 130 miles from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to get down there as soon as possible. My friend Barlow Jacobs was a resident of New Orleans at the time, and he and I had been collaborating on film ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to go down there and, kind of... help them sort some things out. We spent a few days driving around, and that would have been about 2 months after the hurricane and the flood. So we drove around and just kind of drummed up some ideas about maybe a way to tell a story that would, really kind of capture or convey, rather, the spirit of the people in the place at the time,
yes.
Which was very surreal, bizarre, very tragic. And but resilient in its own ways too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a combination of things going on at once. This was pretty fascinating. So Barlow, was displaced, but he somehow got a job working as an insurance claim adjuster down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
From another hurricane had come shortly after, and actually caused some problems down in South Florida. So he worked as a claim adjuster. And I realized that was a great model for a film.
Yes.
A young, naive guy comes to town looking to make some fast money doing claims, but in the process meets a lot of local people who have suffered various kinds of damage or loss. And so this young claim adjuster would have his eyes opened to another perspective on the hurricane. And that's the model we used for the movie. So that's the basic plot right there.
Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to call it a docudrama? It's not really a documentary, although it certainly gives a lot of the hard truths and facts and of the story of the people who were impacted by Hurricane Katrina. But it also tells a human story. That is, its fictional parts are about these two guys, right?
That's right. So it started off as a completely fictional story. There's this real thing that happened, this real event. With a plane left to film in New Orleans and the surrounding areas and to find places that had been, damaged by the hurricane and/or the flood,
mm-hmm.
and use that as our not just as a backdrop, but as a character unto itself. That the
yes.
place becomes a character.
Uh-huh.
So it was a fictional film, but there's all these elements and aspects of the film that you couldn't ever recreate.
Yes.
Film studio in the world could have recreated some of this stuff there. And so the film has a documentary quality to it because of that. So it is a kind of historical document in that way. So looking at the film, we watched it in New Orleans a few nights ago and watching it with the crowd for the first time in 7 or 8 years was kind of interesting. And it was like going back in time,
Yeah, so I can imagine. It is now making its digital premiere, which includes iTunes and other online or other very 21st century systems like streaming Netflix and Hulu, etc. We'll talk more about that later. But how I'm always concerned a bit. As a matter of fact, I was writing something about that this morning, and I think probably inspired by thinking of interviewing you, that, you know, we remember tragedies, 9/11, et cetera, Kennedy assassination, and the media reminds us every year for a while, and then they sort of just fade away. Film, however, especially a film like yours, lo and behold, is something we can keep coming back to. And when you put it on digital for the masses, if you will, it opens up a whole new audience. Is that your expectation?
That's an expectation and also, you know, hope. You know, the film is, we released it initially at the Sundance Film Festival in 2007.
Yes.
You know, so then it played at a lot of film festivals, had a good response out
yes.
there, but this is before all of the digital releases, and, you know, it's a very low-budget film in its own way, but it also appeals to a broad audience, so it was somehow bad timing in terms of releasing the film. So now at the digital platforms where, you know, people can call this stuff up on their computer or home television, the film has a new life, which is really cool.
Yes.
Yeah, there was for years these kinds of things would happen and these films would just kind of fall into total obscurity. So this is nice. You know, a lot of people do watch films this way, and I think that's
yes, more and more. Even I do.
right.
You know, but I think we should mention at least because it's won numerous festival awards. It's got quite a positive feedback during this 2007, as you say, Sundance Film Festival. And Mike Miley for the Huffington Post wrote, "Lo and Behold is a fantastic work of cinema that's funny, heartbreaking, honest, and beautiful." And from what I've seen of it, I couldn't agree more. For a moment, Zach, let's talk about some of your other work. I've also been moved by God's Architects, for instance. Tell us about that.
Sure. God's Architects is a film I actually started making before we made Lo and Behold.
Mm-hmm.
But then whenever Lo and Behold came about, put it on hold for about a year. Mm-hmm. I got back into it. And so God's Architects is a documentary about five visionary, divinely inspired architects, builders, rather.
Uh-huh.
You know, these guys who have built castles, towers, and mountains.
Wow.
And they do all of this with very limited resources, hardly any money, if any. No blueprint. So these guys are like folk artists that make really big structures. And so I was really inspired by these guys to kind of, you know, follow a vision or a dream or a calling to do something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to the rest of the world.
Mm.
But once they do follow that dream or that passion, it actually means something to a lot of other people.
Mm.
So all these guys have touched, you know, touched others and moved others and inspired others in their own ways.
Well,
and they inspired me to make a film. But anyway, that was a great experience. And that was the first real documentary I made. So I try to go back and forth between documentary and fiction.
I was so impressed with it. I mean, it was awe-inspiring. It really was. I just wanted to have you comment on it. You know, another one that was of your works, A Man Without Words. And I know you worked with Susan Schaller, I think is her name, who wrote the book, A Man Without Words. She's a teacher and writer, and this story was so fascinating. Also, I presume a documentary. This man existed, and somehow, not only had he never learned to speak, but he never learned that language was something. In other words, there were words that described the things he was seeing, but he hadn't made the connection. Susan Schaller was able to make that connection for him, and you captured it on film. So,
right.
What about A Man Without Words? That, too, is powerful.
It is. That is basically a film that I discovered by reading an interview in a magazine wherein Susan Schaller recounts the story of teaching language to a deaf man who had never learned language and didn't know sound existed. And come to find out, this is one of the few cases in modern history where there's an account, a written account of an adult acquiring language so late in life. Usually people say you can't acquire language and pass the age of, 12 or 13, even if you're deaf. But what Susan did was she very naively and without knowing what she was doing, she was 22 at the time. She taught this man the beginning of language and the beginning of grammar and these kinds of things, and it changed his life, changed her life. And another very inspiring story.
Yes.
So we made a film, a short film based on that, and Susan is a writer, so she's been doing a book tour with this story, and she just helped out with the production of a play based on the same story, and she did that up in North Carolina, so she's kind of traveling all over the globe and showing the film and sharing the story. So,
well,
cool.
Where did this man grow up that he knew nothing of language?
Well, he grew up, he's got a very interesting life story. He grew up, very impoverished in rural Mexico. And he was cared for. He had a family live on a farm. He was cared for. And then his family arranged for him to live and work with another family member in San Diego. So he kind of had his young adult life in San Diego and was a gardener, and his uncle cared for him. He worked. He knew how to garden, because this is just purely visual, Steve's cause and effect. And so that's kind of how we figure that he was able to keep his mind nimble and not just totally turning in on himself.
Yes.
That he had an active life and was cared for by family members. A lot of times what will happen is people that they've discovered that never learned language have basically been raised in a barn, literally, and not cared for. So yeah, they kind of turn into almost a very inward person with an active life. So it was really good.
Well, it is. All your work, it just seems absolutely fascinating. We're going to take a short break. We are talking with Zach Godshall, the director and co-writer with its star Barlow Jacobs of Lo and Behold. Lo and Behold is a docudrama that makes New Orleans and the effects of Hurricane Katrina on New Orleans and the people there a character in the film, as also Barlow and Zach create fictional characters that tell a very human story. So stay with us. We'll be right back with this marvelous director. We'll talk more about Lo and Behold, where it's going from here now with digital platforms, and introduce its producers as well. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. The coming-of-age story is a classic film narrative. Young person experiences conflict at school or with family, gets involved in a romance, and comes out on the other end with a new outlook on life. We usually view these films through the veil of our own memories, so our reaction can be personal. But when they are well realized, as is the case here, the rewards carry extra appreciation. Written and directed by British sitcom star Richard Ayoade, Submarine tells the story of Oliver, age 15, as he deals with the twin perils of navigating his first relationship and discord at home caused by a new neighbor with eyes for his mom. Divided into two parts, girls first, family second, the film builds to a big, shambling climax where separate plot lines get tangled to form something bigger and more difficult to handle than Oliver could have anticipated. While all the actors in the film do a fine job, especially the two teen leads, the real star is first-time filmmaker Ayoade. His script is equally comedic and dramatic with wonderfully stylistic touches in editing and cinematography. Submarine honors the coming-of-age ideal by infusing indie quirk, humor, and fresh insight, and it will earn its place in your heart. Submarine. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to our conversation with film director Zach Godshall, who co-wrote with Barlow Jacobs. Zach directed Lo and Behold, which is a docudrama of the true story of the effect of Hurricane Katrina on New Orleans and that part of the country, and the lives that were lost, and of course the change that it made in that region. But it is also fictionalized in that Zach and Barlow have created characters that make a very human story. So we don't just look at it. It's not a disaster film, right, Zach? We wouldn't call it that.
That's right. Yeah, I wouldn't call it a disaster film.
No. So let's talk a bit now that you've made your digital premiere in honor of the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. The movie is going to be seen on various digital platforms, and let's give us some idea of where we can find it and see it, like Microsoft,
sure.
Xbox, for instance. You know the list.
Yeah, right now, Lo and Behold is available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and Vudu. And it'll probably be eventually on a few different platforms in the coming months. But right now, that's the place to get it. iTunes is sort of the top place.
Uh-huh.
And there, you can also get the same thing on Amazon. So
very good.
And that's for rent or for purchase.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, a bit about how you met Barlow, first of all. Barlow Jacobs stars in Lo and Behold, and he's a co-writer with Zach on this film. How did you guys meet?
Barlow was living in New Orleans, and I finished up film school. I went to college in Los Angeles, and I finished up and moved back to my hometown, Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And a mutual friend introduced me to Barlow because, knew Barlow was an actor and a writer and interested in film. And so we met, and then I ended up casting him in my thesis film for film school. We filmed that in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And within a few months of that, that's whenever Hurricane Katrina hit. And so Barlow and I had become friends by then and decided to actually write a film together.
Wow.
That friendship and then the storm and the desire to write a film together. And we wanted that film to blend to documentary fiction. That was a thing I thought about for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were so affected by the storm, and we thought, well, we should do something about this. And, Marla was literally affected by having to move out, and I was just, I was in a town a couple hundred miles away, and a lot of people came there that were displaced, and just kind of feel like I needed to do something about this in the movie, so we did.
Exactly, and did it extremely well. I always say timing is divine, and when I listen to and talk to you and Barlow too, I get the feeling that you meet, and then soon after that, there's the Hurricane Katrina. You know each other. You're capable of writing and working on film, and lo and behold, happens. And in the meantime, Barlow gets an offer for a job to go to Florida to be an insurance adjuster, and that's one of the characters in the. I mean, it's like, whoa, there are no accidents here. This was meant to be. And
it's true.
Yeah, and I'm really happy that more people are going to have the opportunity of seeing it now with the digital platforms. Tell us something about your producer team. Jared, how do you pronounce Jared's last name?
Moshe.
Jared Moshe and Sarah Hendler. And, of course, Barlow Jacobs also was produced.
And there's Colby Johnson, who's a producer that we worked with in New Orleans. And he's the guy who made the production itself. He facilitated the production.
Mm-hmm. How did these people come into your life and join the Lo and Behold team?
Barlow had worked as a claim adjuster down in Florida after another hurricane had hit there that same year, and he made some money doing that work. And he took that money that he made and funded the production of the film.
That was
pretty cool.
Yes.
And then we started getting going, and we realized the production was getting pretty big, and in terms of the amount of actors and locations that we had involved. We hooked up with a producer in New Orleans, Colby Johnson, and he provided us with a lot of services like office and editing suite, and he organized casting calls, and the cast and crew were kind of, you know, under his supervision. And then when we were wrapping things up, we worked with this producer, Sarah Hendler, who sort of managed to post-production and the release of the film. And Jared Moshe is the guy that we hooked up with once the film got into Sundance. We met Jared, and he gave us he supported the film and helped us to actually finish it. It cost a lot of money to finish up the film.
Yes.
So that's how that all kind of panned out. And, you know, now that's our crew, that's our team that made the film. Besides, you know, all the other creative people that worked on it.
Excellent. It takes a real team. It does, to pull it together, and then of course to be selected by Sundance Institute is no small accomplishment. Sundance has a relatively new program called Artist Services. How does that work, and how did it work for you? And lo and behold.
Well, Artist Services is something that Sundance Institute started a few years ago to support films and filmmakers that had some kind of relationship with the Sundance Institute. So they provide distribution services, and mainly through digital platforms like iTunes and Amazon and Netflix and Hulu and these types of things. And so when, we've been wanting to find a way to release Lo and Behold, and we've talked about a lot of the options, and really they're so supportive and friendly with filmmakers.
Yes.
And so that was a great fit. And so that's what we did. I released a previous film of mine with Sundance Artist Services, and it was a good experience. So it's a great home for the film. You know, happy to be working with them.
And what was the previous film that you did through Sundance?
It's a film called Lord Byron.
Yes.
And that's a movie I made in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
I played at the Sundance Film Festival back in 2011, and we released it through them, and that's online as well. You can find that down Lord Byron on iTunes and Amazon, etc. So that's there as well.
Now, Lord Byron, is that the one where the man he schedules different girlfriends at different times of the day? Forgive me, I didn't see that one, but is that more or less?
That's right. It's something like that. That gets him into some trouble, as you can imagine.
Yes.
It's more of a comedy, than Lo and Behold. Lo and Behold is actually funny. There's a lot of funny parts of Lo and Behold, but the big story of Lo and Behold is something that, you know, ultimately kind of tragic.
Yes.
It feels lost, that kind of stuff. But, Lord Byron is a comedy. Wanted to do something that was not just light. You know, there still was something interesting about this middle-aged guy who's got a few different girlfriends, but he kind of wants to go straight. He finds out, he wakes up one morning and decides he wants to become a monk. But before he goes to the monastery, he wants to kind of have one last hurrah.
Yeah.
And then that goes so well.
Just one? All right. Well, that is fascinating. I have to say, Zach, and I'm not just saying it because you're a guest, I have seen at least trailers of your work, and I truly am impressed. And I'm looking forward to seeing Lord Byron now. Tell me, how is it, you know, even Spielberg goes everywhere to make movies, but how is your life as a filmmaker in Louisiana? How is that different than Florida, even, or New York, or California?
Sure. I spent 3 years in Los Angeles. I went to UCLA. I liked it, but I knew that the industry there wasn't for me.
Uh-huh.
At least not, you know, at that moment, or not right now either.
Uh-huh.
I knew that I needed to get back to Louisiana to make independent films here.
Yes.
You know, I grew up in Louisiana, and I just, you know, every time I would visit, I just was more inspired and wanted to get back here and be here. And something about the attitude, the culture, the landscape, just kind of all gets my wheels turning. So I have a good experience here. There's a great film community that is really building up in New Orleans. There's a big film industry, actually, now in Louisiana and Baton Rouge and New Orleans, Shreveport. But, you know, so far my films have been pretty independent. And, you know, there's other things that are going on with young filmmakers that have relocated here and made Louisiana their home. So it's kind of nice. It makes me feel like not as alone as maybe it felt a few years ago. There's other like-minded folks around. So, but one of the things I never have really felt alone, but this culture in South Louisiana is really, really thick, and the community, the communal aspect of things down here is something I've always really felt good about. You know, there's a great sense of community.
Well, you know, I get a real sense of, and I think I mentioned the last time we talked, I have a very dear friend still. He lives in Virginia now as a PhD or something with Shenandoah University. A very good friend, and has been my friend for many years. And he was from New Orleans. He was not there during the Hurricane Katrina, but his mother was, and his entire family. And so in that sense, I lived through this, not only through the news media, but also through this good friend, and he's trying to reach, well, you know better than any of us, he's trying to reach out and reach them and get some kind of communication, and that went on for a long time, and finally he just gave up trying to call, he just went, he's got some stories too, so I can't wait to tell him about Lo and Behold, because I know he will appreciate it. As you speak, I listen to you, and I listen to Glenn. That's my friend. There is a soul. There's a spirit about Louisiana and New Orleans in particular that I get from both of you. That I mean, everybody, if you're lucky, I guess, loves where they're from, loves their roots. I mean, I love New York City. No matter where I am, I still feel like New York. But, you know, in our business, we go wherever the work is. But it's nice to have a place that you can call home, not just personally, which is great, but professionally you call home because it's a part of your psychology. I guess that's what I'm saying. It's more than its physical, visual presence. It's something in the air. It's something in the people. It's something in the will to survive and rebuild. And I think you capture that in Lo and Behold, and you challenge it at the same time. What are your thoughts on that as I analyze you?
No, I appreciate that. I was talking with a friend about this last night even. You know, when you're in a place, I can tell you all these reasons and everything, but when you're here, when I'm here, it's like things just start working.
Yes.
And it has a lot to do with just things that you feel or intuit, that kind of thing. It's when I'm not here, I feel like I'm traveling, which is a good thing. You know, like to travel, of course, but
yes.
The feeling of being at home. My family, you know, my parents still live in Lafayette, Louisiana, and my old friends. And then I went to LSU as an undergraduate, and I'm teaching at LSU now. And then I've spent all this time in New Orleans with making Lo and Behold and other things. And from New Orleans, it's almost like a second home also. So each of those cities are about an hour apart. And then I've made several films in the marshes along the coastline of Louisiana. So that's also a place that speaks to me, that I've had a lot of relationships. And so, you know, it's pretty great for me, you know, in terms of a place to live and work. So there's also just a ton of stories and characters and those kinds of things everywhere you go.
Yes.
So there's no shortage of, you know,
material.
That's
true.
All that. So, there's no plans to leave this place.
Gotcha. I have. I want to end with talking about your life at the university, but before we do that, let's make certain we get a website and Facebook page information. folks. What's your website? I know it's an easy one to remember.
Sure. The website is lowandbeholdmovie.com. That's L-O-W.
Oh. You know,
lowandbeholdmovie.com. And on there, there'll be links to how you can watch the movie on iTunes and Amazon, Google. There's also a Facebook page that we're trying to keep updated and stay in touch with people that way. That's just Lo and Behold. And you can look at that and find the movie page on Facebook if you use that. You know, I try to use Twitter a little bit more than I'm used to. not really my forte, so I'm
so
trying
weird.
To spread the news that way too. You know, so using the hashtag Lo and Behold Movie.
Yes.
So any way we can, we're trying to spread the word. Kind of a grassroots thing. So if you do happen to see the movie and like it on iTunes or wherever, you know, write a review that helps spread the word. Tell your friends to watch it.
Excellent. Also, one quick word about Blind Wall Pictures and Mama Bear Studios. They are involved with you and Barlow and Lo and Behold as well, yes?
That's right. You know, Blind Wall Pictures was the company that Barlow Jacobs formed to make the film. Mama Bear Studios is based out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and they have overseen the new release of the film. So they've helped us get the film ready and in shape to actually distribute, this year. So that's how we hooked up with them. Marlo is originally from Chattanooga area, so he's that's how he knew them.
Excellent. Okay, your new teaching job. Tell us about that. You start Monday, August 24th.
That's right, right. Well, it's actually not new. It's just new for, I've been off for the summer. So today,
okay.
The 24th. I've been teaching at LSU, actually right after we made Lo and Behold. I was totally broke and had nothing in the bank account. And an old professor of mine asked me to teach a class. And one thing led to another, and I've been here since.
Oh.
I've been 8 years. I've been teaching screenwriting at LSU.
Excellent. Fantastic. All right, then. This has been a marvelous conversation with the director and co-writer of Lo and Behold, Zach Godshall. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Conversations with you are always inspiring. He makes beautiful movies, everyone. Beautiful movies. And funny.
Thank you.
Moving, funny, inspiring. And they make you cry, but sometimes you cry from laughter as well as, you know, not all tears are sad tears, but there is sadness in what Hurricane Katrina did to us as a country, and that's some of the stuff that we need to still deal with. But in any case, thank you so much, Zach Godshall, for being on the show today. We wish you all the best in all your work, and I guess that's all I can say. We'll talk again sometime soon, okay?
All right. Well, thanks for having me on, my fellow. It's been great.
Same here. Bye now.
Bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. In the film Young Adult, the presence of Patton Oswalt in a supporting role transformed a difficult film into a gem. In Big Fan, Oswalt plays the leading role. And the result is a dramedy that is both dark and outrageously funny. The spark for Paul Alfiero's life is the New York Giants. He lives with his mom and never misses a game from the parking lot, cheering with his buddy Sal and challenging his chief rival, Philadelphia Phil. Using prepared jabs delivered on sports talk radio, Paul's life is his team. One night, he spots Giants star linebacker Quantrell Bishop and follows him to a strip club. Gearing up his nerve, Paul approaches Bishop in full idol worship mode, but is rewarded with a roid rage beating so severe that he awakens in a hospital days later. Problem. His team is his religion and Bishop his deity. Paul is shattered. If he testifies to what happened, he will hurt his team. Like an abused spouse who can't summon the strength to leave, Paul is lost. Yes, Big Fan is a dark and interesting character study with the talented Patton Oswalt providing its treasured heartbeat at the core. Big Fan, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. The wild Wipeout character ride roars honor. What is it about the North and South, whether Korea's, Vietnam's, or our own house divided at the Mason-Dixon line? Is the fault in our stars, or are we so easily blinded by fast-talking flash-in-the-pan Pied Pipers stealing our children's future? Our universe is constantly revealing its secrets, but failing to listen, we risk missing the wisdom of harmonious unity. Life, lives, and living matter more without repetitive clutter, overwhelming data devoid of complete and accurate information, outdated even before we tap our screens. We talk a lot about the right, but dishonor the correct. Anchoring our babies and elderly to our one-day point swings rather than solutions to gender equality, laughing while black, crippling student debt, we leave 5 million Americans living with Alzheimer's in 2015. For many years after his assassination, the media honored President John F. Kennedy's death, if not life, every November 22nd. Now, in email land, most of us haven't a clue who he was or, arguably, the profound effect his assassination had on TV news and the American voting psyche. In the 1960s, most welcomed the change John Kennedy brought to politics, to politicians, and to America's civil and voting reality, posthumously transforming Jim Crow into voter ID, the KKK into border security, and Lincoln's Solid South into the 2000 blood-red Republican Party with a tea-stained appendage. Naturally, we honor the memory of those murdered on September 11, 2001, with roll calls, bells tolling, and moments of silence. But how often do we honor those sent to be maimed, brain damaged, or killed for our oligarchy of war profiteers on corporate welfare? Now we need to decide who and what will we honor in 2016. West Coast families are fleeing unrelenting record home, land, and life-destroying fires, drought, and water shortage. Trumped-up corporate-owned conservative right-wing extremists, Fox Talk Radio, and even MSNBC can only regurgitate DT's Sturm und Drang, all while Nestle sucks the H2O out of California. Are we so easily distracted by echo chambers of email servers while Ashley Madison expedites our family values with click-a-cheat? Or are those Americans who bother to exercise their voting privilege still too smart to be slimed by oil-slick GOP puppets? Remember, Trump may not be just an obnoxious, dishonorable, self-serving smokescreen hiding the wall closing in on brown immigrants while Black Lives Matter taunts Bernie and Hillary. It is vital that we listen to victims of K and Wall Street's who still choose the Donald for the POTUS. For that kind of thinking is far more dangerous to freedom, justice for all, and equal economic opportunity than any desperate for power cokehead. The truth's Achilles heel is its inability to impose itself on those preferring to salivate over the political party making the most noise with the least ideas. Don't you suppose somewhere in the darkness Karl Rove is laughing at us? Or is he crying over spilt Trump milking it? Our honor is steeped in our national self-examination of our political priorities and who we choose to elect and to memorialize. On the morning of August 29, 2005, Katrina slammed into our Gulf Coast. When it made landfall, it was a Category 3 hurricane with sustained winds of 100 to 140 miles per hour and was 400 miles wide. Yet how many times have we as a nation honored the 1,833 American fatalities? How many even remember that 1 million Americans were displaced by our Katrina gridlocked federal, state, and city governments? It is not institutions, streets, buildings, bridges, sinkholes, mudslides, or storms that dishonor our potential and our character. It's the non-voter, the lascivious family values hypocrite, the blind with greed CEO, and the craven conservative con artists posing as patriots. The worldwide free fall, like our Great Recession, is about character. And for the poor and middle class, neither was free will. Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, though total opposites in character, are being used as conduits for extreme, gut-wrenching displeasure with the status quo. If we don't get that that's the universe talking to us, honor this. Civilization doesn't guarantee a perfect world. But civility grants great ensemble opportunity for our human family to create life that matters better each day for our entire rainbow. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.